It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. For decades, mystery surrounded gospel musician Washington Phillips. He played mostly in his hometown of Teague, Texas, on his own unique instrument, his mandolin. Phillips only recorded 18 tracks in the late 1920s and literally has not been heard from since much. But an Atlanta-based record label, Dust to Digital, has changed that. It's remastered and repackaged that music into a collection called Washington Phillips and His Mandolin Dreams. The album is up for a Grammy Award, and here's one of those tracks, Lift Him Up, That's All.
When Jesus was around here on this land, he said he'd do his Father's command. Because he knew that he was his Father's only Son, he came to draw men unto him.
Dust to Digital co-founder Lance Ledbetter joins me now. Hi there, Lance.
Hi, Celeste.
Also with us is Michael Corcoran, a music journalist based in Austin. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Celeste.
And on the phone from Teague, Texas is Doris Neely. Doris was a friend of Washington Phillips before he passed away. Hi, Doris.
Hi, I was a neighbor.
A neighbor of his. Which side did you live on?
Which side? Simsbury community, where he lived.
Uh-huh. How long did you know him?
From a child up until he died in 1954.
So before we start talking about how important he was, Doris, maybe you could tell us a little bit about what kind of guy he was. What kind of neighbor was he?
He was a good neighbor, but as a child he was scary because he was different. But the music brought us all together. He would perform at community functions such as 19th of June and special occasions when they would allow him to perform. At other times, he would just play the music up and down the back roads of Simsbury community. And then he would come on into Teague, which is about 7 miles away, and with his donkeys and his wagon and his music. And he would play the music to let people know that he was coming. It sort of reminded me of the current ice cream trucks that go up and down the streets in Teague selling their goods.
What instrument was he playing on when you saw him performing?
As a child and as I grew up, I really can't say because it really didn't matter to me. All we knew was he was playing something that was flat and in that. And had to lay on a flat surface, but he would lay it down in this little wagon. The donkeys would be in front, and he would lay this instrument down in back. And as a child, I never paid any attention to its form or what it was, but it was just beautiful music. It was the kind of music that struck your attention.
Michael, it's important what instrument he was playing, right? There are people to this day who insist he played on those recordings a dulciola. Why is that not correct?
Well, they based that information on something that was said offhandedly in the studio and written down in the notes. There was really no proof of it at all. And it was pretty much accepted as fact until I started doing my research. And I started talking to the people from Simsboro and from Teague, and I asked them to show me what it looked like when he was playing. And they were strumming strings, and a dulciola is a keyboard instrument.
And you showed some of them a picture of a dulciola, and they said, that's not it, right?
Yeah, they said, that's not it. And then I showed them the picture that was found in an ad in, I think, 1928 in Louisiana Weekly, and it showed him holding these two zithers that were sort of Frankenstein together, and they were going, yeah, that's it. But they kept saying
it was in a box. And a zither is plucked. It's got strings.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's hear a little bit. This is Mother's last word to her son.
I never can forget the day when my dear mother did sweetly say, you are leaving, my darling boy. You always have been your mother's joy.
So, Lance, what is it about that instrument? Why is there so much instrument over what it was he was playing?
Well, I think in the 78 RPM record community, Washington Phillips is kind of, for years, has been a giant of mystery, where, you know, these collectors have talked about the instrument, because on the labels that came out in the 20s, it just says novelty instrument. There's no exact term of what it was. And I think when we were putting together our first set, it was a gospel box set called Goodbye Babylon. We encountered Washington Phillips through this collector community. And Michael was writing at that time for the Austin Statesman newspaper, and he put out an article in 2002 sort of answering some of these questions and asking more questions. And to a small amount of people, that article really caused some waves, and people started to understand Washington Phillips differently. We started to see him as, you know, there was this myth, another myth besides the instrument was that he had gone into a mental asylum and died as in an insane asylum. And Michael was able to debunk that myth. And so, you know, I think Washington Phillips is someone that we didn't know a lot about other than the records. And here we are 80 years later, 90 years later, figuring out what he was playing and what his life was like.
So he was a recording artist with Columbia between 1927 and 1929, which is a big deal. That's a pretty big deal. So Doris, did he brag about his recording career?
No, he was not a person to brag. All he did was play his music, sold his syrup, ribbon cane syrup, and his various liniments and ointments that he produced from herbs out there in the country. And we never knew anything about Columbia or his recording or anything as a community. The first time I knew about that was when Michael called me and introduced me to it. This community knew nothing about Columbia.
But he was also a jackleg Baptist preacher, right, Doris?
That's right.
Meaning, jackleg meaning that he didn't have a church of his own.
Didn't have a church of his own, and he was not credentialed, and he was just not recognized by any of the key denominations. But when he would go around to the churches, sometimes they would let him preach. But he was like a vagabond. He was just not accepted into the inner circles of the community, even a small community like Simsburg. We loved him. We would take care of him when he would get sick. My mother would. But he was just different. He was unique. He was artistic. But at that time, we didn't know about we had no appreciation for his artistic ability. We just heard the songs. We accepted them, especially in church, because my main song was Take Your Burden to the Lord and Leave Them There. That inspired me all my life.
Take your burden to the Lord and leave it there.
So let's hear another track, and this is one of his more well-known songs, actually. It's called Denomination Blues.
Mm-hmm. I want to tell you the natural fact. Every man don't understand the Bible like. But that's all now. I tell you that's all. But you better have Jesus. I tell you that's all.
So, Michael, in a way, his status as a kind of a vagabond, as Doris says, made it a lot harder for you to get information on him. And Lance was mentioning that for a long time people thought he died in this asylum. That was a case of mistaken identity. What happened there?
Well, when I first started doing research, I was researching the Washington Phillips who died in 1938 in Austin. Like Lance said, I was a music critic for the Austin American Statesman. And I had heard a record by Washington Phillips, and that's where the mystery started with me. The music, I just thought, I've never heard anything like this before or since. And I think that his introspective style of songwriting was totally unique for the time. And so I was looking for an excuse to write about him, and, you know, the paper's not going to pay you to write about a guy from East Texas. And once I found the Austin angle, that's what I researched. And for about a week, I thought, I did a lot of research on the guy who died, and then I found out later on that it was his cousin, actually. It wasn't, it was a different Washington Phillips. They had the same grandfather, but, these were the townspeople of Teague and Simsboro who they kept telling me, no, it was my cousin, the other cousin that played the music, not the one who died in Austin. And so, like I said, it took me about a week. And when I finally figured out, I called this guy named Virgil Keaton, who was related to both of the Washington Phillips. And he was also, related to, I think Washington Phillips' mother, Nancy, was his aunt also. There was another relation that way. And he's the one that set me straight. And when I got off the phone, that's the time I realized that they had the wrong guy all along, and I had the right guy. And from that time on, it's really been kind of my mission to follow through on every bit of information I find about Washington Phillips, because, you know, I'm not really a great researcher. The thing is, I was the first one to really look into it. The people who had written all the stuff about Washington Phillips before were Europeans who were basing that on death certificates that they got through the mail. I was able to get in my car and drive for 3 hours and talk to eyewitnesses. And one of the reasons why it did work is because so many of the people who knew Washington Phillips and lived next to him, like Durden Dixon and Doris and Loyce Mims and other people, they're still alive, you know. And when I first started doing the research in 2002, there was a lot more people alive than now. So I was lucky that way. I was able to talk to, you know, eyewitnesses, and they set me straight.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with music journalist Michael Corcoran, Teague, Texas resident Doris Neely, and Dusted Digital co-founder Lance Ledbetter of Atlanta. Lance, that brings me to you. You talked about how you first heard Washington Phillips in 2003 when you were putting together Goodbye Babylon, but what was it you heard? What are you hearing in Washington Phillips that makes him so unique?
It's one of those things, you know, I think people that hear Washington Phillips, it either strikes a chord inside them or it does not. And the people that does strike a chord inside, it strikes it very hard. It's a music that's very powerful, very haunting music that, for me personally, I've never been able to forget. And I know a lot of other people that feel the same way. I mean, it's been pretty interesting with this release, the Washington Phillips and his Mandarine Dreams, to see it sort of connect into a mainstream audience. Like, it was covered by CNN and The New Yorker, and people heard his music and it struck that chord inside them too. And I just think it's very unique. Michael, through his research, was able to try to come up with some theories on how this instrument was built, why he built it this way. But we don't know. There's still a lot of questions about where he got these ideas to make this instrument, where he developed this style of musical playing. And I think people, when they hear it, they like to try to figure it out too, because it's very special. There's no one else like it.
That sounds angelic. Let's hear another song. This is I've Got the Key to the Kingdom.
I got the key to the kingdom, and the devil can't do me no harm. I got the key to the kingdom, and the devil can't do me no harm. Well, you take old prophet Daniel, they put him in the lion's den.
So, Doris, did he sound like that even when he was older? Did he preserve his voice?
Yes, he did. He was about 74 when he died, which in today's society, that's not very old, you know. So he preserved everything that you're hearing. It brings back memories to me because it's so real. That's how he was. That's how he sounded.
You can still remember him singing from his wagon?
Yes. In fact, I get a little teary as I reread the book this morning. I became a little teary just reflecting on him.
Michael, how do we know it was called a mandarine?
Well, there was an article that came out in the Teague Chronicle in 1907, which was actually 20 years before Washington Phillips recorded. He was only 47 years old when he first, you know, stepped into a studio. And in this article in the Teague Chronicle, it describes the instrument, and it describes how he plucked it, and it was, you know, 2x4, 3 feet and that sort of thing. And it said it was an instrument he made himself that he called a mandarine. And so I just thought that was a really good thing to delve into. You know, why did he call it a mandarine? And I have some theories about that I explore. As Lance said, there are, even though I did uncover a lot of things that nobody knew about, there's a lot of things that are still left out there that we don't know.
Doris, have people in the neighborhood who still remember Washington Phillips, have you guys all read the book and listened to the recordings?
I couldn't say. I don't know. Most of them were at the book signing, but no one has mentioned it since. There's not been a gathering in the community where we discussed it. It's just as if it was just a dream. It came and it went just like Mr. Washington Phillips did.
So, Lance, this is what your company does, finding these sort of oftentimes obscure or forgotten things. It's incredibly labor-intensive. I have to imagine the repair job on these recordings was incredible. Why? Why do this?
Well, I think the way this set came together was in 2013, I reached out to Michael and just asked him, I said, is there anything that you think that's not out there about Washington Phillips? Because to me, he's one of the greatest musicians America's ever produced. And if there's a chance that we can know more about this person and who he was and what his life was like, to me, that's it's just something that needs to happen.
Yeah, but why that? Why is it something that needs to happen?
I think it has. It needs to happen because these people are too important to you know, we're too close to it. Like, he died in 1954. I reached out to Michael in 2013. That's not that long in the grand scheme of things, between that in that time
yeah,
period.
Yeah, you guys deal with much older recordings.
We deal with much older, but we have the opportunity. We're never going to have the opportunities to meet special people like Doris, who have these memories that they're carrying with them. And when Michael is able to uncover or interview Doris and people in the Teague community to uncover more information about Washington Phillips, there's not a second chance at that, you know. And when people 100 years from now are still celebrating Washington Phillips' music, we'll have put together more of a foundation on who he was so that they can know more about what made this great music.
That's Lance Ledbetter, co-founder of Atlanta record label Dust to Digital. You also heard Michael Corcoran, a Texas-based music journalist, both nominated for a Grammy Award for their new republished collection of songs, pictures, and stories called Washington Phillips and His Mandarin Dreams. And we also spoke with Doris Neely, a personal friend of Washington Phillips. Thanks so much to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.